Well, talk about random thoughts. I mean, I'm going to be talking about quantum entanglement, at least how I apply it to my view. This is Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. It's about 8:35 in the morning. Once again, that's June 13th, 2018. About 2:35 in the morning. So I said it's only fitting because these notes are going to be scattered and random. And I guess it's only fitting because I'm talking about the uncertainty that they found, that physicists have found at the quantum level. It's why they have all these different theories, of which one they talk about the wave function. So I started, I was just trying to understand. I mean, the physics part definitely interests me, but I always kind of fall back to my default position that everything begins as a thought. And of course, when I do that, see, I think that everything that we consider as real or material is actually a reflection of conscious thought. It's so I guess where I could start is I had framed the I was kind of looking at it like a carrier wave and the intelligence that's impressed upon the carrier. And I came to view, I guess I would relate this back to the metaphysical Big Bang, that when consciousness became fully aware and created, that set the carrier wave, that set the parameters of the carrier wave. So I think, G. Spencer Brown referred to this as canons that permit or allow. So I would frame what I'm referring to as the carrier wave as what's become known as the constants that physicists speak of, I'm sorry, the Planck constant, and the constant of the effects of gravity. So these are the things that, under my framework, I would refer to as the inherent system. We are born into an inherent system. So this inherent system, the foundation of that is the carrier that intelligence, intent is impressed upon. And changeable, malleable, so far, not so much. Outside the realm of possibility, wouldn't say that, but you know, constants are just that. It's what we can rely upon. And so that kind of comes back to that fulcrum. And if you're trying to accomplish something and you need leverage, do you really want that fulcrum, that constant, to be something that will give way? Something that in some instances you can count on and others you can't? I would say no. So, you know, I guess everything's a mixed blessing, a blessing and a curse, but in this case, I would lean more towards, you know, let constant stand. This is part of the inherent system. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't try to see if we can bend the constants a little bit? I'm thinking most especially of being able to travel faster than the speed of light, which man has conceived of. Maybe there's someone out there who has some insights into how that could possibly be done. I know my own thoughts on it. They talk about the warp drive, and I've always kind of seen that as in my just in my imaginary framework as let's just say call it the fabric of space-time, and that the warp drive could fold space up, sort of like ripples, kind of like draw it up and ripple it to where there's peaks and valleys. And then the conveyance, however you would imagine that vehicle or vessel to be, would basically just kind of skip, like a rock does across the surface of the water, would just kind of skip across the peaks of those waves, those folded, it'd be fur, it would be fur, folded space, and it would create, to me, that's how I kind of see it. It's just kind of rippling across, or skipping across, rather, the folds of space, or space-time. That's really what it comes down to, the space-time continuum. Now, is that something we're going to do? I don't know, but I can kind of see it would be an end-around run. Nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. But there is that folding up and unfurling of the fabric of space-time, if that's a way, if there's a way that a warp field, that's what we, that's so, sort of how we refer to it right now, could do that. I could see how we could bend, so to speak, that rule a little bit. So, coming back to the basics, so the inherent system, that's the carrier wave, and to me, it's a consciousness. It's the consciousness is the primary presence. It is the thing that bring that is the spring well of everything else. And then intelligence is impressed upon that carrier. It modulates the carrier. So, with all that said, what I was kind of thinking about, it comes back to the change the course of thought, you change the course of events. And I was thinking about, well, the superposition theorem. I was thinking about the wave function and how physicists refer to the collapse of the wave function when we detect the particle. All possible positions and velocities, and then we detect it, and all that collapses, all the possibilities collapse except one, and that's the one that manifests. So I was just kind of trying to understand not the physics part of it, because to me everything begins as a thought. So I was trying to understand about the multiple modulations of all conscious beings. And somehow, when I was thinking about that, the term quantum entanglement kept popping up. And in the end, I started thinking, well, I didn't actually start with this word. What popped into my mind was something I've observed many times in nature. It would be like a flock of birds flying, or a school of fish swimming. And within the flock or the school, there are what I would say very, there are many random movements by the member class. So there's the individual movement, and then there's the movement of the formation. whether it be a flock of birds or a school of fish. So although at any given instant, there's many random movements within the school or the flock, within the formation. And if you looked at just that one entity, then you could guess at the direction that, well, I guess you'd know information about that instantaneous direction of that particular entity. But there would be a lot of information that you would be at loss to understand about the formation itself. So, and that's kind of what stuck with me. And what I realized was that that's a form of entanglement, not the quantum entanglement. Well, I'm not saying, because you see, if you go back to that saying that I have written down, the energetic activity considered in physics is the emotional intensity entertained in life. This goes back to, you know, what I've believed for a very long time about radiant and reflector. It's a mirror image. And so I was thinking more of it in the case, or in the as applied to the course of thought, how in, and then of course under the sports metaphor, I have notes that refer to the tribal and to the team. And so the tribe, they may not be in formation, but because they have similar visions and similar values or overall views, they become connected. There's a correlation simply because of the commonality of the principles and priorities that they live by and the recurring patterns that they project into the system. So what I'm saying is this is the intelligence that's impressed upon the carrier. So even though at first glance, they would not appear that they're in a formation like a flock of birds or a school of fish, because of the recurring patterns that they project, they do have an influence on the overall direction of conscious thought. You see, this is where I come down to the stage. In other words, this is where I come down to you have the connect the dots, which is the conscious constellation of concepts, thought instruments, the conceptual side, as above. Then you have the as so below. So if I take the stage, if I accept the stage as the world in mass, and then I think of these individuals who have common values and visions, then I can easily see how I could imagine them in a formation taking, you know, this goes back to the hand of the master on the tiller of the world. So they're collectively steering the world in one direction upon a course of events. And this is true of each, so now I'm going to use the term, this is true of each team. Although they're not physically, perhaps, in close approximation, close proximity, we inhabit the same sphere, the same realm, I guess is a better word. And as a result, each, and this is again, each team is moving or steering, I should say, influencing the direction of thought and therefore the direction of events, the course of thought and the course of events. And this all comes down to the competition or competing. Well, it comes down to competition, and it's a competition or competing ideologies. It's conflict. It's human conflict of competing ideologies. And so that's kind of so there is a to me in and I'm going to do this in closing because that's kind of what I wanted to capture very roughly and bumpy, but at least I so. There is a form of entanglement there, and at each juncture of intent, it would be like looking at the school of fish or the flock of birds, where one individual in one position within that formation makes a radical move in one direction, even if they're not at point, which that's another thing that I found that out, that they actually, I know this of birds, and I guess it's probably true of fish too, but I don't know, but they've witnessed where these birds in formation, it's pitch and catch, just, you know, goes right back to my pitch and catch, my structural model. They trade up. One will take the lead in the formation, and then later that one will drop back and another one will move up. And from what I gather, it's exactly what I said about pitch and catch. It's about rest. The one taking point, from what I gather, is the one that's working the hardest. And then by falling back, that one gets to be work a little less, and there's a rest cycle. But what I'm saying is any of these intentional course corrections within the formation does influence the formation in some way. And that's the individual part that's played by that individual intent and the steering that individual's influence and contribution to the course of thought and therefore the course of events, actually steering the formation. So they don't necessarily need to be a point. And I think it's pretty obvious in politics. You see this a lot. So again, it's just I'm trying to wrap my mind around all this the best I can so I can share it the best way I can as I, you know, start to record and post my offerings. So, yeah. I have in the notes that it's a sports metaphor of human conflict and it is related to game theory. And somewhere, I know I've got to read up on a little bit more, but there's zero-sum games. I've got to remember, or I've got to find the notes, or I've got to do a little bit of research to remember where that there's a kind of game structure that seemed to apply best to what I was attempting to approach, and I need to identify that. But going back to these notes. Free agents, what I talk about, what I call potential initiates or minions, and of course they can take on the masters, they can become a master within their domain. So competing ideologies and its evolution versus revolution, teams and tribes, which again is based on visions and values, which I, you know, collectively can, you know, sometimes refer to as their view of the world and their role in it. Avatar, and then I talk about the two basic natures, the avatar nature and the troll nature. And then loose associations, close connections. So tribal, in that they become closely connected through shared views. That's their view of the world and their role in it, which is based on values, the principles and priorities their lives revolve around, and vision, the world or the state of human affairs that they dream of, that they envision. And then team, in that they exhibit loose associations through their mass actions that are guided by their close connections, resulting in mass effect. So again, these are loose associations that are based on their close connections because of their shared views. So I'm trying to tie a neat little knot around this. Of course, things get tangled up all the time, but I'm trying to bring it down to a level of concise simplicity. Yes, there's complexity in the world, but I don't have to go into all the details. That's, it goes back to the old saying, the devil's in the details. It's just about sort of sharing what Pat refers to as the takeaway, sound bite. It's if they go into the details of it, it's a very big mouthful to chew, but you start with a morsel, hopefully to pique their interest. That's really what this is about, because they're participants. They're participants in the game, and the more they know about the game and the more they know about the potential impact that they can have, it goes back to the master's craft. Engage the quest to master the art and science of crafting yourself and the world around you. This is really what it's about. So anyway, I think that's about all for now. Signing off.